Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. There's bad news on inflation, as grocery prices rose faster last month than they have since 2023. At the same time, President Trump is pushing for a gas tax holiday to give people a break at the pump as they head out for summer travel season. But let's start with the latest on inflation. Here's Tommy Tucker at WWL in New Orleans.
Stephen Cage joins us, Bankrate's financial analyst, to talk about it. Hey, tell me about inflation. How's that doing?
Not great. It's going up. It's going up pretty fast.
Now, we're talking about the rate of inflation or prices? Or is it the same?
Well, so they're not the same, but they are both, they're both rising. Let me break that down. So the last 2 months, these are the 2 months that are covering essentially the impact of the war on Iran. Mm-hmm. It's been the fastest 2 months increase in the rate of inflation since June of 2022.
Wow.
We're running at a 3 month annualized rate of inflation of 7%. So that doesn't mean that inflation,
wait, say that again?
Inflation is 7%. The last 3 months is running at an annualized rate of 7%.
Okay.
Inflation. So, you know, the speed with which we have had price changes over the last 3 months is equal to an annual rate of inflation of about 7%. It doesn't mean that prices are up 7% from February to today, but it means that if this were to continue at this pace, they would be. And what that means for consumers, no surprise, is gas prices are higher, grocery prices are higher, and people are probably noticing that. We will eventually see the rate of inflation, the rate of change, start to cool down. But the price level, the actual prices you're paying for a can of beans, or a gallon of gas, some of those things, that is going to wear on people. And that's what people are dealing with today.
When it comes to the prices going up, they seldom come down.
They seldom come down,
right?
Gas prices, they can't have the ability to come back down. If we get a barrel of oil that goes back from, $90 to $100 back down to $60, then we'll see the price of a gallon of gas also start to come down. But it'll take some time. But food, airfares, the price you pay on electronics, apparel, as those prices change, they don't necessarily go back down. They may continue to stick around at their new price level. And that's probably the most concerning thing over a longer period of time, over multiple years. It's sort of a resetting of that baseline.
Now, you said the fastest since 2022. What was going on then?
Well, that was the last time we had the big inflation spike. That was the war in sort of the war in Ukraine. It was also the post-pandemic sort of supply chain snarls that we had. People were sort of resuming their life in a way. We had a lot of demand. Supply chain was not quite fixed yet. And so that's when we saw that massive spike of inflation that people remember and really got us talking about all of this in the first place.
So I guess what I'm getting to is if we had a big inflation spike in 2022, prices come up and on gasoline they come down, but on other things they don't, correct? Generally speaking?
In a lot of cases, yes. Generally speaking, that is correct.
So now we're saying we have an annualized rate of 7%, not 7% since February, but if it stays like this until the end of the year, it'll be 7%. I guess the point I'm making, Stephen, is that the prices are going up 7%. They don't come down much. And meanwhile, I don't guess wages have kept up with this?
So wages have not kept up with this, not in the last few months. Actually, the increase in inflation has now clawed back in real terms most of the wage gains that we've made over the last couple of years. So you know, on average, the American people have essentially not made any progress in clawing back earning power since all of this began, since the pre-pandemic period.
So people are getting squeezed.
Very much so.
So how do you, I don't know, what do you tell people in terms of it's going to get better?
I wish I had a lot of, I wish I had a silver bullet for you, but I don't. I mean, this is just a very, this is a frustrating and tiring situation that, you know, we make one step forward and two steps back. You know, in the middle of 2024, we had a rate of inflation that was close to about 2.5%. And it has gotten worse and then gotten better and got, now it's getting worse again. We just cannot seem to break past towards the benchmark of about 2% inflation that the Federal Reserve targets. That's what they want to be at. We have not reached that in over 5 years. And we get closer and we get some sort of a headwind or some sort of an issue, whether it's tariffs, whether it's now this war in Iran, that is creating more inflation for the American people. You know, it's making it difficult. It's making people's finances and their budgets very difficult.
So how does this story end, Stephen? Because I've always wondered if you extrapolate it out, do my grandkids wind up paying $40 for a roll of paper towels?
You know, in the long term, yes. You know, in the long term, I don't know what that time frame is, but over a long enough period of time, you know, then yes, you're going to get a situation where roll of paper towels, you know, a bushel of apples is going to cost considerably more than it does now, almost, you know, to a level that you might imagine absurd.
$38 for a steak, for example, right? $38 bucks for a steak at a grocery store.
Yeah, $15 for a hamburger. You know, that would be absurd to somebody, you know, 60 years ago. But that's the circumstance that we're in, and it happens incrementally over time, little by little.
The war in Iran and its effect on gas prices and transportation is a big driver of this sudden upswing. Here's the latest on that conflict from KCBS in San Francisco.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from PUC examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
President Trump travels to China this week. The Iran ceasefire is on what the president calls life support. The U.S. has rejected the latest proposal from Iran to end the war. CBS News military analyst, retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Jeff, good morning. What are you watching closely at a time like this with, you know, one side comes up with a proposal, it's rejected, the other side with a proposal, it's rejected. What are you seeing as you read the tea leaves?
Well, seeing right now that this, we're really at a deadlock in this particular negotiation to end this particular conflict, Steve, and we need something to break out of this. Now, what might that be? Well, clearly this will be a topic between Mr. Xi and President Trump as he travels to China. Chinese have enormous interest in the opening of the Straits of Hormuz, very important for their economy, and they get a substantial amount of their oil from the Iranians, but also have very close economic ties with all the Gulf Arabs. And, of course, that's all tied up with the Straits of Hormuz being closed. So what comes out of that meeting will be important. Secondly, we've had a continued exchange of fire, even though the ceasefire is ongoing, and we've had some attacks by the Iranians against the UAE, perhaps to keep the price of oil high. And, you know, any one of those, if it involved a U.S. vessel and we suffered casualties striking a U.S. naval vessel, for example, I think could almost ignite this particular war and escalate things very quickly. And then the third thing I'm watching, frankly, Steve, is the war in Lebanon. We keep not talking about that too much, but that's ongoing. Intensity of attacks by the Israelis, now into the neighborhoods in Beirut, 2,800 people killed. And the Iranians have continued to link a solution to that particular war to the overall agreement with the United States. So that's got to be part and parcel of any solution.
Do we know how the U.S. blockade of Iranian ports is going? Is it effective in crippling Iran, or is it kind of like, you know, swatting in hornets? You just make them mad.
Well, it could well be that, but it certainly has had an effect on their economy. And we got to remember, this is an economy that before the war was suffering 40% inflation, 20% unemployment, rolling blackouts of electricity, shortages of water in the capital to the point that they actually have plans to evacuate the capital. And that was before 13,000 airstrikes hit them during this particular conflict. So there have been subsequent reports of over 1 million people losing their job and almost a collapse of the currency. And a big question about how long they can store oil without having to shut their fields down, which would be pretty disastrous for the economy as a whole. That being said, economists I'm talking to say they can probably hold out for a couple of months as they try to negotiate with the United States and get a better agreement.
Do you see it more likely that fighting between the U.S. and Iran escalates as opposed to peace being on the horizon?
I don't think peace is on the horizon right now, Steve. I think there's a real possibility of us seeing more conflict between the U.S. and Iran. And the president has said repeatedly that if there is a return to hostilities, it will be an intensification of airstrikes. Don't forget, before the war went to ceasefire, he talked about striking their electric power grids or water supplies, et cetera. At the same time, the Iranians have threatened to counterattack against our bases in the region as well as our allies. For example, there's a real concern in the Gulf. They might strike the desalination plants in Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, places like that. And those countries are very, very dependent on that particular water supply. Some say some of their major cities couldn't exist for a long period of time absent those water supplies.
Do you see any likelihood of American ground forces moving into Iran?
Well, I think we have to come down to the final understanding that we have really two paths here. One is a path of compliance, and that is we're going to force them into an agreement and then expect them to comply with that agreement, sort of like the JCPOA. But we're going to still be existing with the current regime, or collapse, and that is we're going to take the regime down. Now, if you end up going to path number two, collapse, the only way to do that is put boots on the ground. I was one of those boots on the ground for about 30 years. And people need to understand that the population of Iran is twice the size of Afghanistan's population and Iraq's population combined. The land area of Iran is 1.5 times the land area of Iraq and Afghanistan put together. So if we went into that in a big way to take that regime down, we're talking a major conflict for a long period of time for a president who said he was never going to get us into another endless war.
The higher expenses rise, the worse President Donald Trump's approval rating becomes. In a new move to appease Americans, the president is pushing for a gas tax holiday. Here's more on that.
Let's go live to our line to Washington, ABC News national correspondent Stephen Portnoy. So, Stephen, are lawmakers in Congress on board with this?
Some are. The question is whether the Republican leader in the Senate, John Thune, is. And he said yesterday that he'll hear out the president's argument, but he has paused. Look, Congress has never, never suspended the federal gasoline tax currently at 18.4 cents, which it has been for decades, which funds the Highway Trust Fund, which pays for road and bridge construction and repair. Ultimately, the president said yesterday he'd like to see it suspended for a period of time. He didn't specify how long, but because it's a federal law, it would require the House and Senate to approve legislation that suspends it. And ultimately, what would it mean for the average, price at the pump? Well, the average price right now nationwide is about $4.50 a gallon. So you take out 18.5 cents per gallon. It's a roughly 4% savings on the current price of gasoline. And if you have a sedan that has, let's just say, a 16 gallon tank, that's about $3 for every fill up of an empty tank, which over the span of a month could add up. But the cost to the trust fund, estimates are it could be $3 billion a month nationwide. And ultimately, how does that get replenished? Where does that come from? And that's what gives congressional leaders a bit of pause, even as it's a popular notion. I mean, anything the government can do to lower the price of gasoline now is something that both parties are going to see members get behind.
Stephen, the president says a ceasefire with Iran is on life support. Where are we in the negotiations to really come up with a peace deal, and what do you think could happen next here?
The president yesterday rejected an Iranian response to the American proposed framework that was aimed at setting some ground rules for deeper negotiations. The president called it a piece of garbage that they sent us, which he said he didn't even finish reading. Iranian state media reported yesterday the country's counteroffer included lifting U.S. sanctions, paying reparations to Iran, and ceding control over the Strait of Hormuz to Iran. The president says as a result of that response, the ceasefire is on massive life support. He said it's where the doctor walks in and says, sir, your loved one has an approximately 1% chance of living.
What's the chance of a gas tax holiday? Tommy Tucker weighs in from WWL in New Orleans.
Let's see what the underpinnings of this are, and then we'll talk with Greg Upton from the director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies.
As Americans feel pain at the pump due to the Iran war, President Trump says he'll try and help. The president says he'll move to suspend the federal gasoline tax, which adds about 18 cents per gallon of gas.
Till it's appropriate, yeah. Till it's a small percentage, but it's still money.
AAA says the average national gas price is $4.52 a gallon, 50% higher than the average before the war started. The president cannot suspend the federal tax on his own. Congress has to sign off, and bipartisan lawmakers have been pushing for a suspension. State gas taxes are often higher than the federal version. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Hi, Greg Upton joins us now, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. How you doing, Greg?
Doing great. Good morning, Tommy.
Let's talk about the high price of gas. How much higher is it than it was, say, a year ago?
Yeah, so right now, nationally, the price of gasoline is in the ballpark of about $4.50 per gallon. Here in Louisiana, it's more in the $4 range. And that's really increased about $1.50 since the beginning of the year here. And, of course, the reason for that is the conflict in Iran, the Strait of Hormuz, which is how about 20% of the global oil supply exits the Persian Gulf and enters that global market. As we've seen that been disruptive, that's leaned to large increase in the oil price, which has led to significant increases in gasoline prices for the consumers that we're all of us are experiencing right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, before we start talking about ways to lower the price of gasoline, let's talk about why it got so high and the reasons are.
Yeah, the reasons are really simple. At the beginning of the year, you know, markets were really kind of in balance. Oil prices were relatively low. Gasoline prices were relatively low. There was a lot of supply out there on the horizon. There's been a lot of technological advancements that have led to really an increase in our ability to produce oil. We've seen vehicles over time have become more and more efficient. And these two things together led to relatively low prices for consumers. And then we had the large disruption with Iran. Iran itself, of course, is only about 5% of the global oil production. And before this conflict really escalated, a lot of that oil was already sanctioned. But it's really been the disruption of the Middle East supply of oil to the global market that has really led to this increase in prices that we've seen.
So we're feeding it on one end, but at the other end, we got sanctions off of, we took sanctions off of Iranian oil, right? To try to keep
correct.
The world price down?
Yeah, so in response, of course, there were sanctions on Russian oil as well. You know, we could talk about the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and, you know, they, of course, are a very large supplier of oil and natural gas. And then you've got the Iranian oil as well. And so in response to these high prices, kind of ironically, what you can see is kind of lifting off some of the sanctions in order to try to mitigate those high prices that are happening. But don't get me wrong, there's still a lot of pressure on Iran, obviously, and those markets are being impacted a lot. But at the end of the day, if you have a really large supply disruption, that's going to lead to an increase in that global price. And that is what we're seeing.
So the president said higher fuel prices are worth paying to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. But I think we're confusing a lot of things there, because was it the Strait of Hormuz that's causing the big increase in gas prices, or was it the attacks on Iran to begin with?
Well, I mean, the Strait of Hormuz is, a strait that gets geographically kind of narrow there, and it's right in proximity to Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And so the response of Iran to this is, you know, they can't, they probably don't have the military force to defend themselves, against a major powerhouse such as the U.S. And so kind of what's been their geopolitical strategy has been to, really blockade that strait, disrupt that oil supply, put an upward pressure on the global price of oil, and hopefully that politically becomes untenable for the West to continue that conflict and kind of puts the pressure on the U.S. in order to back off there. So that is perceived to me of what kind of their strategy is and why they're those two things are so interconnected.
So the Senate Majority Leader John Thune says that he's not a fan of gas tax suspension. He says he'd prefer to reopen the strait to normalize gas prices. And he says anytime you suspend the gas tax, that leaves a big hole in the highway trust fund. Somebody texted in, Greg, shouldn't that show us that we're too dependent on foreign oil and change that? We export millions of barrels of oil. Don't understand why that should affect us with all our oil. Explain, if you will, about the world demand and how, I guess, they're going to sell it where it's most profitable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the market for oil has been described as one very large pool, if you will, and the price of oil is really determined by global supply and global demand. And so whenever you have a global disruption to supply, like we've seen here in the disruption of the transportation and the getting that oil out from the Middle East, that is going to impact that global price, regardless of whether or not you're a net importer or a net exporter of the product. And so, that's just kind of a reality of economics. And yes, it's true that the United States has seen large increases in both oil and natural gas production over the last decade. Yes, it's true that we've invested in all this infrastructure to export those products in the not only oil itself, but also liquid fuels such as gasoline and diesel and jet fuel. But it's also true that when there are these global changes to the market, that still impacts us through that price channel. And by the way, it's a double-edged sword. On one hand, when the price goes up, a place like Louisiana that has a lot of that oil and gas production, but also has a lot of the investment in the refining, chemical manufacturing that produces those products and ships them globally, that's going to economically benefit those sectors of the economy, which then ripples through the economy here in Louisiana. But on the flip side, the consumers are going to see that price increase. And so that's the, you know, kind of balance that we see with these global price swings.
It seems like we're chasing our own tail, though. If we took sanctions off of Iranian oil, which allows the Iranians to make money, but yet we're shutting off the Strait of Hormuz, which means we're paying more for gas.
You know, I'll defer on commenting on the kind of geopolitical strategy that the administration is implementing, because there's a lot of nuance to that, and there's a lot of, really nuance to that is the best way to say it. But it's a balance, right? It's a balance of achieving those military objectives, achieving those long-term security objectives of, the Iranians, or the Iranian government, I should say, having access to nuclear weapons. That's a real threat that it's hard for us to understand, right? As an average citizen, how big of a threat is that? How imminent is it? That's hard. I mean, there's a lot of, I'm sure a lot of confidential information that the administration has access to. On the flip side, the immediate impacts of that on consumers, and that's a hard thing to balance.
So if the Highway Trust Fund is depleted, what happens then?
Then what we'll have is general fund revenue to fund roads, which is what we've actually seen in the past, is that Highway Trust Fund has not been sufficient. So that's been the trend that we've been seeing and appears to be likely in the future.
And that brings us to more debt and deficit.
That's correct.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.